going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
It is 7:06 on a Saturday night, the Saturday night of celebration for Gopher fans as they triumphed over Penn State. That was an amazing game. For all of you who are out there celebrating, for those of you who were at the game, that must have been so cool. The scene on TV, which is everyone storming the field, was just, it was incredible. It was really, really neat. Really neat to see. So congratulations to the Golden Gophers. Well, this half hour, we're going to explore a medical development that has a lot of people who have loved ones or relatives or friends who are suffering from cystic fibrosis very encouraged. The FDA has approved a new drug for the treatment of cystic fibrosis. It's being called, by some at least, a breakthrough. Dr. Jordan Dunis is the director of the University of Minnesota Cystic Fibrosis Center, and he is joining us now. Dr. Dunis, thank you so much for coming on.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
All right. Let me ask you this. Do you agree that this drug is a big, big deal?
Yeah, it's a big, big deal. I think it's really going to make an amazing change for our patients' lives. Up until recently, most of the treatments we've had have really been to treat the symptoms of CF. It's a genetic disease. It's progressive, where patients gradually lose lung function over years and usually die, eventually of respiratory failure. But this new drug is treating the underlying cause, treating actually the defect. Treating the defect, the abnormality in the proteins in the CF patient cells.
And you know, going back to what cystic fibrosis is, and I've had some friends who've had children who've had it, and I don't know if this is still a therapy, but they had to wear vests for certain hours of the day that would beat on the chest to try and, I guess, you know, get the mucus sort of out there so that it could be, you know, gotten rid of. I mean, does that still happen?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I explained it very poorly. I just felt so badly for these, you know, for my friends and their children, and just to have to go through this. And they're so, you know, I just remember thinking, these people are really brave. I should not complain about anything I've got to do, because that's really tough. And then also to know that your child is going to continue to get worse is really tough. What is the life expectancy traditionally for CF?
You know, it's actually been a real medical success story. The life expectancy is now in the high 40s. Just a few decades ago, I mean, most patients died in childhood, and there have been a series of breakthroughs of treatments for CF. But most of them, again, have been treating the sort of the symptoms rather than the underlying cause. But you're exactly right about this vest therapy, and actually you described it very well. So.
Well, I just remember, you know, I've seen it in a few people that I know, and I was heartbreaking, and these people just kind of soldiered on. This is what they do, and they do it every day and multiple times a day, and I just thought, you know, this is hard. This is hard, and they just are doing it, and they're amazing for doing that. So to think that there's some kind of medication that might make that not necessary is fabulous. But people are still doing the best therapy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So,
and what does it do? So the
underlying problem in CF is that they have thick mucus in their lungs. Now, CF affects all the organs in the body, or most of the organs in the body, but really the lungs are where the major problems are and actually the life-threatening part of the illness. So the lungs get filled with thick mucus that they can't move out. So the vest pounds on the chest, kind of like pounding on a ketchup bottle. It
right.
pounds the mucus out of the lungs so they can get it kind of up to the central lung where they can cough and spit it out. But patients have to do this for a half hour, twice, three times, sometimes four times a day. So, you know, and you include the setup and the cleanup, and, you know, they're spending 40 minutes or an hour two, three times a day just in order to breathe. So that's,
wow.
You know, in addition to numerous medications they have to take for other impacts of the CF. So it's, you know, of all the diseases I can think of, it's among the most labor-intensive. It's just day after day. You don't get any break from this.
Right.
If you skip it, you get sick, you end up in the hospital. So, you know, your description of soldiering on is exactly right.
Right.
It's just such a hard disease, day after day after day, with no break, and no matter how good you are about it, you have to do it again the next day. It's you know, the patients are really an inspiration to me. How hard they work to stay well is just amazing.
You said that there's a genetic component of it. You know, who's at risk for CF, and, you know, can you just get it, you know, even if your parents, grandparents, nobody in your family has it?
So it's a genetic disorder. It's what we call a recessive disorder. So you have to get a gene from your mother and a gene from your father for CF. So each of your parents have to be carriers, and for the most part, carriers don't have any symptoms. So you may not have anyone in your family with CF. But if each of your parents were a carrier and you get the CF gene from each parent, then you would have CF, even though parents and grandparents may not have it. So it is a familial disease. You know, if both parents are carriers, then, you know, sort of theoretically one out of four of their kids would have CF, but sometimes it's, you know, two, three, four, you know, in any given family, it doesn't follow exactly the statistics, but if both parents are carriers, their children may have CF.
Can the carrier gene skip? In other words, can a father have it, pass it on to his son? The son marries somebody who's not a carrier, but the son passes it on, or the father passes it on to his children, and then they could potentially marry. And
yeah, so if you're a carrier, then it's a 50-50 chance that you'll pass the gene on to your offspring. You know, if each of the parents is a carrier, each of them has a 50-50 chance with each,
wow,
with each child. So some of the children of the carriers may be carriers, and some of them actually may not.
Okay. Tell us about this medication, you know, how long it's been, you know, under research, what the impact is from your perspective.
So there's been a series of medications over about 7 or 8 years aimed at treating the underlying defect, and it gets a little complicated.
And what is the underlying defect again?
So there's a protein called a chloride channel. It lets chloride ions move in and out of the cells that line the airways, and when the chloride moves, the water follows it. And so because the chloride doesn't move, the airways get dehydrated, and that's what causes the mucus to get thick. This chloride channel is called a CFTR, and this the CFTR can be damaged in a number of different ways. So sometimes you have the channel and it doesn't work, and other times you don't have the channel at all. So over the past about 7 years, they've kind of developed a series of medications that help make this CFTR protein work. The first one they developed about 7 years ago is called Ivacaftor or Kalydeco, and that worked in about 5% of patients because different patients have different mutations in this CF gene. And that was actually a really good drug because different patients have different mutations in this CF gene. And that was actually a really good drug for the folks that could use it, but it was only about 5% of patients. They then developed a couple of other drugs called Orkambi and Symdeko, which helped in people that had the most common mutation, this mutation called Delta F508. So if you had two copies of Delta F508, which is about 50% of patients, you could use either Orkambi or Symdeko. And they worked pretty well, but they, you know, improved lung function, you know, a few percent and reduced illnesses a little bit. But the latest drug, this drug called Trikafta, actually works whether you have one copy or two of this Delta F508, which is actually 90% of our patients. And instead of increasing the lung function by a few percent, at least on average, it increases the lung function 10 or 15%, depending on your mutation, which is really dramatic. There's no drug we've had for CF that improves lung function. The other findings in the studies, there was a study, there were two studies, one in the New England Journal of Medicine and one in the Lancet, describing the results of the trials. And it also dramatically reduces symptoms. You know, CF patients all day long are coughing, bringing up sputum, and often short of breath. And at least based on the study results, there was a dramatic reduction in these symptoms. So the patients, you know, better lung function and less symptoms and fewer what we call exacerbations. Or they're, you know, the CF patients always have kind of a low-grade infection, but periodically it gets more severe where they need antibiotics or even right. hospitalization. And that dropped by about 60%, these exacerbations. So
that sounds like a lot, but you mentioned, you know, that some of the change was 10 to 15%. I can't remember which change that was.
That was in the lung function. So we measure.
That doesn't sound like that much to me, but you're saying it is very significant.
Oh, yeah. We've never had a drug. I mean, the drugs in the past, I mean, you know, for most part, 5, 6, 7% improvement, you know, we would consider a great benefit. So 10 to 15 is really a dramatic change. A change that people are going to notice, a change that are going to make people feel better and able to do more.
And how quickly are you able to prescribe this now?
The FDA approved it about 2 weeks ago, and we have started prescribing it. You know, it has to go through what they call prior authorization, so the insurance companies have to approve whether or not they're going to give it. So only a handful of patients have actually gotten drug in hand yet, but we are able to prescribe it, and you know, we've been prescribing it for the last couple of weeks.
So just the past couple of weeks. Now, let me ask you that about the prior authorization. I mean, I know obviously that's not it's not your area, but it's an area that certainly affects a lot of people's bottom line. Are the insurance companies falling in line behind this?
So,
in other words, are they making it easy for patients to get this?
Many have, probably not all yet, it's new, it's early, and so, you know, it's not unusual for prior authorization to take a week or two, although a number of people actually have gotten approved even in hours or a day. So, we're feeling pretty good about it, but, you know, I have to see each patient or, you know, our team, not me personally, but I work with a group of doctors at CCF. And, you know, we have to see each patient in order to prescribe the medicine. So we're, you know, trying to get through our patient population. So, you know, it's still early to say exactly how the insurance company is going to respond. Okay. But so far it seems pretty good. But
I imagine there's a long line of patients waiting to see you now.
Absolutely. We the first day it got approved, we got 50 phone calls to our office. So, folks, you know, want it, and absolutely, I want to get as many people through and get them started as soon as I can.
We're chatting with Dr. Jordan Dunis. He's the director of the U of M Cystic Fibrosis Center about this new breakthrough with this new medication that really is providing a relief that is unprecedented for cystic fibrosis. For those that you have been able to prescribe it to, and you've just had it for a couple of weeks at the most, have you noticed a difference? Does it work that quickly? Are there side effects?
So I haven't seen anyone back. I mean, to be honest, the national it was a little bit unusual in the timing of the approval because the approval was 2 weeks ago, and then all of us went to the national CF meeting last week. So we were all unfortunately out of town the first week it was available because, you know, we go to these meetings to learn about breakthroughs and to learn how to, you know, better care for our patients. So my first prescriptions were written this week, and so I've not seen a patient back, and probably only a handful of my patients actually have drug in hand. So I've not heard, but in the studies, so we did have patients in studies of similar drugs in the same category, and they feel they notice improvement, probably not in a day or two, but certainly in a week or two. It looks like, you know, when you look at the study results, that much of the benefit is already felt in probably, you know, within 2 weeks of starting the medication. So not in a day or two, but probably in a week or two, people feel significantly better. And the people that were in the trials, now, when you do the trials, they're what we call placebo-controlled, so patients either get drug or you know, a sugar pill. So, and when you do the study, we're not supposed to know which they got so that we can have a, you know, an objective evaluation of the new medications. But the patients knew what they were getting. If they were getting the drug, they felt better.
Wow. Okay. And is there more work being done on the drug to even get more of a maximizing benefit? It sounds like it's amazing, but it sounds like it's not 100%, you know, with everything.
Sure. So there are a couple things. One, it's only approved down to age 12. I mean, generally they studies in adults first, and then, you know, to make sure it's safe in adults, and then teenagers, and then, you know, they work younger and younger. So the first priority is getting it down into the kids, because the adults, and not that everyone isn't absolutely important with this drug, but the adults have some scarring in their lungs already. I mean, with years and years of CF, the new drugs will certainly help dramatically, but it won't get rid of scar. But hopefully, if we can get it into the really young kids, we may be able to either postpone or prevent that scarring entirely. So then, you know, the next step, I think, is getting it into the younger age groups, and those studies are ongoing.
I would hope with this kind of success, though, that they can, that at least the studies could be expedited, because you've got to have people. They said, I've seen it in children and with these vests, and I'm amazed at how people are so brave to live with this. It's got to be awfully hard knowing that there's something out there that's working in adults, and you have a child that's got it, and you're like, can't get it yet.
Yeah, no, that is a double-edged sword. I mean, the trials are ongoing, but there's the safety side of any new drug.
Sure, and
so,
of course.
You know, before we give it to a child.
Yeah, children are different.
Yeah, you know, we want to be absolutely sure. I mean, you know, the child's physiology, you know, with the growth and everything, is different than an adult, and so you know, we absolutely are in a hurry to do this, but we want to make sure that, you know, we're doing good and not harm.
Right.
So,
right.
They're working on it, and they're working at it as quickly as they can, but also as safely as they can.
Okay. And how about side effects? Because sometimes, I mean, there are so many medications that can do amazing things, but the side effects are just really difficult to deal with.
I mean, there certainly is a list of side effects that happen in a few people. Some people got some rash. Some people had some nasal congestion. There was some diarrhea, some belly pain. But it was, you know, I think, I don't remember all the numbers off the top of my head, but maybe 5 or 10% of patients. And for the most part, they were fairly mild and fairly tolerable.
But it wasn't debilitating.
You know, there was only a handful of people that had to stop the drug entirely. I think, if I remember correctly, and it might have only been two people that stopped, you know, in the trial that stopped the drug due to side effects.
Wow, that is so exciting, and obviously a very busy time for you and your clinic, Dr. Jordan Dunitz, director of the U of M Cystic Fibrosis Center. I can't imagine how busy you are, and we certainly appreciate your time this evening.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you, and yeah, we're really excited. I mean,
that's wonderful.
Disease and whatever we can do to make our folks' lives easier.
That is so wonderful, and there are so many other diseases and conditions that I know people are praying for just that kind of news to come their way as well. So that is really exciting stuff. Thank you so much, Dr. Dunitz.
And thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. All right. That is very cool. We certainly hope that it gets the way of children, too, because there are so many ailments. This one just, it's horrible. I just, I've, you know, the people who really have to deal with this really go through so much, and the families go through so much. Anyway, folks, that is exciting news, and we certainly hope that that continues to deliver exciting news for all those who are struggling with cystic fibrosis. We've taken a quick break. You are listening to News Talk 830. It is 7:28 on a pretty awesome Saturday in the Twin Cities, 36 degrees. Dave Lee brought that up, too. The Vikings are playing on national TV, too. The Gophers, of course, playing on national television. And boy, did they do well. I mean, that was just amazing, amazing, amazing stuff. But we certainly hope the Vikes do it. It makes me so nervous when Minnesota teams get into these kind of crucial big game, big win situations. When that got down to the final moments of that game today against Penn State, I thought, oh no, it's, I don't mean to be negative or just, you know, expressing bad karma or whatever, but I'm from Minnesota. We've seen too many just things, calls go our way. That was like when the Minnesota Miracle happened with the Vikings, that amazing catch in the playoff game. You know, the one thing that I kept hearing was people said, calls like that never go our way. That never happens to us. Well, it's happening to us. It's happening to the Gophers, and let's hope they can sustain it, and let's hope that the Vikings can rebound after last week. They are on national television. They can sustain it, and let's hope that the Vikings can rebound after last week. They are on national television. We'll see how that goes. Sometimes that's not the best performance area for them. A lot of pressure. And I guess, you know, for all these players, they want to do well. And you kind of wonder if that's something, if that kind of pressure affects them, obviously, adversely. They're trying too hard to look good. But the Gophers, that was absolutely amazing. Well, we have to take a break. We're going to give you some weather. When we come back this next half hour, we're going to talk about TikTok. And Shaletta and I were talking about this. Hey, TikTok, it's the new social media app. And she was saying, hey, you know, it looks kind of cool. It looks great. I mean, it looks like it's not that big a deal. I think it looks kind of cute. You know, they're dancing videos. They look like it just seems all kind of pretty sweet and innocent. There's actually concern, folks, and this is legitimate. We're going to talk about it, that TikTok, which all of our kids are on, and if their kids are not on it yet, they're going to be on it, that it represents an actual security threat to the nation, and that there's also concern, legitimate concerns, about the kinds of information that might be available because your children are on TikTok. So we're going to talk to an expert about that. This is a very serious thing. I mean, just when you think you've heard it all, comes something like this. So let's take a quick break, and we will give you some weather, and then we'll get into that because it's something that I think all parents should know. You are listening to News Talk 830. It is 7:36 in the Twin Cities. Hope you are having a great Saturday on this Saturday that saw the Gophers take down the number 4 football team in the country. Yes, they beat Penn State. If you're living in a closet, they beat the number 4 team in the country. Awesome. All right, folks, this half hour we are going to talk, as promised, about TikTok. TikTok. It's the latest app. It's the latest social media platform that a lot of kids are on. I mean, it is incredibly popular. And it's something that, you know, from what I've seen from my child, what Shaletta Brundage was talking about from her 13-year-old, seems kind of okay to me. You know, I've seen a lot of dance videos, cute animal videos. It looks innocent enough. Yet somehow this particular social media platform is considered by some, or being investigated by some, to be an actual national security threat. There are also concerns about the threat to your child's or user's privacy. David Kennedy is the founder and senior principal of security consultant for Trusted Security. And David joins us now. David, do I have your title correctly?
Yeah, you do. I'm the founder and CEO of TrustedSec. It's an information security consulting company, and we do work for pretty much companies all across the world.
TrustedSec. Okay. First of all, why don't we start with what is TikTok? I've described it just because I've got a teenager that's on it. Shaletta, our producer, has a teenager that's on it, and we're like, I thought it looks kind of fun and kind of innocent, you know, to me.
Yeah, and that's, you know, if you look at a lot of these social media apps, you know, the type of information we're sending to these apps is the concern right now, especially with TikTok being a Chinese-based company with the trade wars that are going on right now. And a lot of the hostilities that we're seeing in the cyber front, specifically originating from China and the United States. And so a lot of us, you know, have heard of Snapchat and Instagram and Twitter, TikTok being a relatively newer one, but it's one of the most popular ones out there. In fact, it's close to the numbers of Facebook. And really,
is it close to Facebook already?
It's ranking up there, absolutely. The numbers continue to grow each and every year, and TikTok's one of the most popular apps out there, especially for short media streams and being able to have videos and things like that, have it trend. Kids love this app, and it's becoming more and more popular every single day. In fact, kids aren't even using Facebook.
No. I would say, I have two children. None of their friends are on it. They're not on Facebook, and they are on TikTok, though. And the videos I've seen on TikTok, and is it used to send other things than videos? Because the things I've seen are kind of fun videos where somebody's dancing, and it's just like – it's sort of like what Vine used to be, if anybody can remember Vine. I mean, it sort of reminds me of that. But, you know, it seems harmless enough.
Yeah, and that's, you know, the app itself, there's nothing as far as a concern around the app itself. It's not like Snapchat where you're sending data back and forth and the images are very quickly deleted and there's no record of those. There's a lot of concern around Snapchat when it first came out. With TikTok, it's really more of funny videos. They're moderated. They have to have certain approvals. The main concern and what the reason why the government issued what we call a national security review is because it's a Chinese-based company, and there's been a lot of censorship, specifically in China, around some of the videos relating towards the Hong Kong protests. And so, you know, when it comes to, you know, our amendments here and our freedom of speech here in the United States, that's a major concern for the United States if they start to censor specific political agendas against the Chinese government from the United States, especially relating to United States citizens, as well as the amount of information that is actually being sent to a Chinese-based company. Think of the type of data that you're sending, phone numbers, identities, things like that.
Sure.
All of that's a major concern now for the United States, and especially from a Chinese-based company as it grows in popularity.
Okay.
And so there's a lot of concern right now around that app.
Let me ask you this. There was a furor, certainly, when one of the general manager of one of the professional basketball teams in Texas tweeted support for the protesters in Hong Kong. And it was a big, furor over that and went back and forth and back and forth. Some of the biggest NBA stars got involved. If I was on TikTok and I put on TikTok a video of the Chinese protest and indicated my support for the Chinese or for the Hong Kong protesters, is that something that would be taken down from TikTok?
So that is currently an unknown. So right now there have been specific instances in China where Chinese-based pro-Hong Kong protesters have been taken down, but no specific instance where United States one has been taken down. And there was a Senate hearing last week on this where TikTok failed to show up. And TikTok did release a public statement stating that when we do have reviews, they're done by American-based citizens that review the content to ensure that's inappropriate and not in the Chinese government. However, there's been some conflicting reports about that, and based on the investigations that have come from the initial stages of this of the National Security Review, that does not seem to be accurate in a lot of cases. So, there's a lot of concern around the censorship pieces around there, and whether or not information is actually making it out. There have been reports that content has been flagged as inappropriate and removed that's been against the Chinese government, although it's still being investigated right now.
We're chatting with David Kennedy. He is a expert, security expert. He is the founder of and security consultant of TrustedSec. Let me ask you, is the concern with TikTok that they are, is the concern merely that they are removing things, or that they are taking that which has been posted on the platform and manipulating it either in a way that we can all see that is not the original intent of the person who posted it, or are they taking information and secretly doing something with it, or is it all of the above?
So it's all of the above, and that's why they launched the National Security Review. China, you know, when you look at China as a country, it's a very oppressive regime as far as being a communist country. They have a lot of surveillance over their people. There's a lot of things that are very different there than it is here in the United States. And we've seen this before, you know, previously with the sanctions, again, and the banning of Huawei, a technology producing company based out of China that had a very significant boom internationally around technology, especially 5G technology, as well as a number of other Chinese-based companies. There's concern that when the government of China owns a large percentage of that company and its guidance and influence, what that can have as far as influence here in the United States. And so, you know, when you look at TikTok specifically, there's many concerns with a Chinese-based company that owns the company, essentially, that is promoting that company here in the United States, the influence they can have here, you know, as far as the information that they're taking, they're storing, they're using that as far as analytics. You know, China is one of the largest culprits for intellectual property theft here in the United States. It's a massive amount of money that we lose here in the United States economy, and that's actually a reason for the massive trade wars that we're seeing right now, trying to put some protections around intellectual property theft. And so, you know, whatever China can do to identify pieces of information, people, tracking people, understanding what people are doing, pro stances against Hong Kong, when you're traveling to different pieces of information, people, tracking people, understanding what people are doing, pro stances against Hong Kong, when you're traveling to different locations, all of those things that the app, you know, actually has permission to go and pull, is a concern that they're pulling all this data and storing it in the Chinese government and using that against us. So that's why the National Security Review was initiated to look at the data, what type of data they're taking, as well as, you know, are they manipulating or, you know, hurting our First Amendment rights for freedom
or, or spreading disinformation back to those TikTok users, because that certainly was happening.
Right.
We saw that happening. Let me ask you, if you know, many of us have kids or no kids who are on TikTok. Obviously, there are a lot of adults that are on TikTok. What should parents do?
I think for right now, I would say for parents, it's safe to use as far as we know right now for your children. You know, the what I would wait for is the National Security Review's conclusion to be conducted. And they did not get any participation whatsoever from TikTok, which is somewhat alarming. It means that, you know, hey, they wouldn't send a presence to actually help defend and promote, you know, an environment that they're trying to that they say that they do. But I'd wait for the National Security Review to come through to see whether or not this app is actually safe for your children to use. Right now, there's no indication that that's the case. And the government has not issued advisories yet against that company. And what I mean by that is with Huawei, the government said that they had a high confidence level that the Chinese government was influencing the technology and ultimately eavesdropping or backdoors into the systems to be able to access data. We haven't seen that yet with TikTok, and that will come through the National Security Review process. So for right now, it's kind of a wait game to see what happens. You know, keep an eye on it from a parent's perspective. Obviously, you know, I'm a parent as well with three kids. Luckily, no smartphones yet. They're still at the age where I don't have to worry about that for about another 2 or 3 years. You know, one of those things to keep an eye on for this National Security Review process.
Right. And it's, as I said, you know, it's, you know, Snapchat, I'm not thrilled about. Instagram seems, you know, fine. I mean, it's just, it's the way our kids are communicating. And this particular platform just seemed sort of fun. And that's why when I read about these things, it just seemed, you know, sort of startling. But I guess the issue is it's not clear, is it, at this point, what the Chinese government is really doing with TikTok?
If you look at the National Security Review statements that came out, there's a large concern right now from the government on Chinese-based applications, tools, hardware, things that are being produced in China as these trade wars escalate and as our relationship with China declines, because they have taken major steps in the past to ensure, you know, superiority, data collection, whatever they can do to ensure China's superiority. I mean, we are in a very interesting time right now with China. And so, you know, this is a major concern with TikTok and a major concern just across the country, not just with TikTok, but also other technology firms. And something that, you know, here in the United States and our allies, you know, the EU and what we call our Five Eyes, the intelligence agencies, they're all very concerned now on Chinese influence across the world.
Right. So, and you're saying that concern is elevated because of the current tensions that exist between the U.S. and China with this trade war going on.
That's absolutely right. And you know, if you look at,
I mean, that's sort of crazy that an app that kids are using is being watched and studied and analyzed as a potential national security threat because of the tensions going on between the U.S. and China and this trade war.
It is. And, you know, it's if you flash back, you know, 4 to 5 years ago, China was by far our number one largest adversary in the cyberspace. What I mean by that is that China was hacking into corporations and companies, stealing everything they possibly could in order to promote their own economy. I mean, source code, next generation manufacturing diagrams. I mean, it was basically an unfiltered access into our infrastructure so that China could build products, you know, half the cost because they didn't have to spend $1 billion or $2 billion on research, and then sell that same product here in the United States that we had put all the investment in from our economy. And so, you know, you look at what's happening today, and they're being much more aggressive in the types of information that they're stealing from us due to the heightened alert with the trade wars and with the current geopolitical situations that we face with them. And so, you know, there's a large scrutiny here in the United States around China specifically because of the elevated attacks we're seeing, the elevated data collection, and really the overtness of China trying to push their influence in to try to win this trade war. So it's unfortunate. It's a byproduct of it, but it's something that we're dealing with today in the economy.
Right. And it's something, I suppose, that, you know, well, we're saying, you know, we're not sure, you know, what exactly. And I think most people would agree that they're glad the government is saying, hey, this is something we're concerned about. We're going to study it. At the moment, though, we really don't know. And that can be scary, too, because, you know, as these things unwind, you can find out, oh, my gosh, it's going back, you know, a few years, they've been doing this. How long has TikTok been around? Because I only really heard of it in the last, I want to say, 8 months or so from my kids.
It was, it's been around for a while. So a Chinese-based company bought a company called Musical.ly, which they ended up kind of ditching that app and moving more towards TikTok. But it's been around for a few years.
Okay.
And, you know, it's definitely grown in popularity each and every year because of how easy the interface is, how easy it is to share that information with a large set of users and to get to go viral. You know, we hear the word viral all the time. You know, YouTube was kind of the initial starting point for a lot of this when you had videos going viral. It's the same thing with these. You know, you post a funny picture or funny video, and then, you know, you share it out to the entire world, and then all of a sudden, you know, it starts to get rated up, and then all of a sudden, now a lot of people are seeing it. It's a very easy way to kind of promote yourself and funny things that are kind of happening out there and kind of go through video. So it's gained a lot of momentum over a short period of time, and it's pretty impressive to see its user population in comparison to already established platforms like Twitter, Facebook, and other ones.
Right.
It's competing up there. And that's a major concern for the U.S. Government as well.
David Kennedy, the founder and senior principal of TrustedSec, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate your insights.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on, and a pleasure to talk to you.
Absolutely. All right. Just when you think you got all the stuff you're going to be worried about and you're worrying about it, there's something else to worry about. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to News Talk 830. It is 7:54 in the Twin Cities. Shaletta, share. Just in the break, you know, we're coming back, and Shaletta's like, oh, did you hear we were on NBC Nightly
NBC
News? No,
Nightly
that's so cool.
With Lester Holt, the entire Brendan family.
And I've heard about this because WCCO has done a story on this as well. It's this new area at the Viking Stadium where you can go with people who are on the autism spectrum, and they can enjoy the game without being, you know, scared.
Right. It's called an autism sensory friendly room. There's dim lights. They actually, Esme, have two licensed therapists from the Fraser Institute in there to help parents out when they have kids in crisis. And they've got noise-canceling headphones. They've got goodie bags. They've got toys. It is amazing. It's a game changer.
Wow. And are the Vikings the only team that have done this?
No, there's six right now.
Okay.
And they really, you know, reached out to us and asked, what do you think we need? How can we help? Because we were complaining that we couldn't get through the first period.
And you know, you want to go to a game too, and it's expensive.
Yes.
It's expensive. It's the whole day's tickets.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, you want the children, even though they have special needs, to be able to enjoy life just like everybody else.
Right.
You can't keep them in the house until they're 30, Esme.
Right.
They've got to go to football games and get out and meet people and have fun.
And you need to have a break too. Yeah.
And what about my older boy who enjoys football and he's a normally developing child?
Yeah.
And so, so far we've been able to stay through three quarters. We made it all the way to the fourth quarter. We were so excited. So this room is a game changer. So
NBC did it last night.
NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt. They did a story. They came out to Minnesota, Kevin Tibbles, and they talked to our family and the kids and the Vikings and us, and we just had a great time.
That is so cool.
Isn't that awesome?
So cool. So, you know, I am, obviously I work for CBS, but I am a big fan of Lester Holt. I think he's just very classy and does a nice job, and I met him years ago down in Houston at one of the conventions.
Really?
And he was just could not have been nicer. Could not have been nicer. He was working for the local CBS station in Chicago.
Oh, okay.
I believe.
Okay.
And I mean, he was a big star in Chicago, and I think he went to New York. And anyway, obviously, he's huge now. But he could not have been nicer, and that's that certainly is a good show.
Mm-hmm.
So very cool, very cool. And I do think it's great that the Vikings, they also were the sponsor of a flag football tournament that my daughter was in, where there were a lot of kids with autism on it. They paired like kids who were on the spectrum with kids that were not on the spectrum, and it was really cool. It was a really cool thing, and the Vikings helped sponsor that. So I think we should give a shout out to them because they do a nice job with all of those things. All right, we need to go. We'll be right back.